beyond duality, ever beyond, 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 beyond. Welcome once again. Good evening to Ever Beyond. This is Wolf Spirit Radio, and you're listening to JP. And tonight I am speaking with my esteemed guest, experienced chrononaut, somebody who makes noises like that. Genius mind. I'm going to try and translate what he's saying to you so you'll get what he's saying, but it's really important. So we're gonna have fun. It's gonna be a very we're gonna try and do a lot of telepathy on this show. So we're probably not gonna be taking phone calls, because some of the concepts that I'm gonna try and structure it. Well, not structure it, but just kind of place things, name things. Quite good at naming things. So without any further ado or confusing statements, actually that's probably not going to be the last of the confusing statements tonight, but I would love to introduce a charming young gentleman, William Stillings, otherwise known as Brett. So that's a long story. Everything's a long story. So how are you doing?
Thank you for having me on. I'm doing good. I'm just trying to coordinate everything that's falling off the shelves right now and putting stuff away, but it's all right. Things are good.
So that's brilliant. So welcome to Ever Beyond. Tonight I had a kind of intention, because I've heard you. You've been on Wolf Spirit Radio relayed through Muggsy's shows. You know, you've done about four or five of them, haven't you?
Yeah, I've done just about that, about five or so.
And it's, you know, you've been talking about a lot of stuff, very, very interesting stuff. So we've got all that stuff in the archives if people want to get some of the background of what you've been touching down with us. And tonight I wanted to kind of call you on all the, what are you talking about when you mentioned this, that, and the other? And so I've asked you on, and we've had a couple of conversations earlier today. I'm trying to get you to where you understand what I'm trying to get to. So because it's a subject that is it's beyond most people's sort of day to day life. In a sort of physics way, you live like a Constantine kind of character, that you're living with this energy and these concepts and ideas, and so communicating it to the person in the street is not going to be so prevalent. You're in it. No, you're doing it.
There's a talent and an art to it. Is prepping them and getting them ready for the plug and redirecting to how they should. Or not really how they should think. It sounds dictatorial, but
yeah.
What processes and get rid of some of the disinformation and the conditioning that society and the schools have put into place, and kind of just starting fresh again.
Yeah. So, shall we talk about elementals?
Yeah. All sorts of,
not elementals. Elements. Well, elementals and elements. Because, you know, in my model of the universe, everything has a consciousness now. So we're talking from the same place. So let's start right down at the atom, what people call the atom. It's a we're taught in school it's like a solar system or something.
It is.
With something in the middle and stuff whizzing around the outside. There are rings, and they try and smash them apart, and all this weird stuff comes out that doesn't seem to be part of the model that we started out with. So
leave it to government, science, and military to start smashing things. Let's see if we can break it.
Yeah. What's it made of? Let's bust it with a hammer and see if we can find out how it works. Oh, sorry.
That's literally the definition of that is back to 2 years old with money.
So the toddlers in the military have done stuff. Bending reality and all of that sort of stuff.
Well, reality perception. They're getting to the smarts of utilizing. It's not violating physics; it's utilizing physics.
Yeah, but in a way, it's like adding a couple of extra pages to the physics book. Adding the couple of pages that they ripped out earlier.
Yeah. So whatever did happen to Tesla and his papers.
Yes.
That became our industry of teleportation.
Right.
And with teleportation comes the CIA and drug running. That's what a lot of people meant is how do you think you support all that industry and paying the cost of teleportation and stuff is that's what the whole drug industry was about.
For the development of it.
Yeah, to pay for the, there's a well-loved joke in the community and in the industry is how many CIA does it take to screw in a light bulb? It's just one, but it's filled with cocaine. And that's kind of true, but it's not as glorified and cloak and dagger as people would see them. I mean, literally, I did one sort of token symbolic run was I think around 90s or 91 or so. Mm-hmm. I delivered about a half a Ziploc bag of cocaine. Just wrap. It was made flatter for me because I was thinner, and I just carried it on me and just walked in. Just went to the one apartment in L.A. They were always happy to see whoever showed up. I mean, sorry to talk about drugs and stuff, and I hate it, but people are like, have you ever done this and that? And so I kind of, that was a immediate question. I won't throw it up. And that was basically my whole interaction was that one event. Mm. And I mean, it was free. I mean, is whatever monetary system they had developed, between agency and people was some money made it back to whomever or wherever. But that's how it was done. It was that was more symbolic than anything, honestly, and no regrets on it. It was just to be a part of and to kind of touch bases on all those events. And there's a lot of stuff, really.
Yeah, there's a lot of stuff, and in a way, it's one of the key hidden elements of the late 20th century, in my humble. It's like the big kind of this. It's like the whole of space has got a kind of a great big blackboard. People or just bits of wood that people have painted black, just to hide the real stuff.
Yeah, reverb.
Yeah, reverb. Go on.
Just not too much spoken of. that was I never even put too much thought into it at all. In fact, very oddly, that also resided in a blind spot socially for me. An interaction is never kind of really put two and two together. Really, never thought anything of it. Not that I was supposed to, so I didn't.
Yeah.
And Yeah, I mean, I didn't mean to sidetrack anything, but...
No, it's an interesting thing, because we're talking about teleportation, and we're talking about how it got funded, and also the cover-up involved in covering this up also covered up an awful lot of other stuff that would have come in handy, let's say, that we could all be the Jetsons nowadays.
Yeah, we should. People should be doing a lot more available things than what they're doing. Yeah. I give a comparative of going to the Eiffel Tower for 15 minutes for coffee, and that's a very, very real aspect. You know, spend 3/4 of a second going someplace, and then spending 15 minutes talking with friends or people, seeing sights, and you know, being back in the office, and you know, in an hour.
Excellent.
And it's well within the reach of people, as long as they pressure the United States government and the and everyone to come forward to give recognition to it. That's really all that's required. To be a part of their own development and their own making availability for development.
So this is one of the things that I'm interested in. Well, the whole theme of the hidden technologies that we're accessing. But really, what I'd be interested in, and I think it might be safer to do so. Rather than talking about specific industry things that you might have witnessed, that we talk about the understanding of how it works so that people can get it, and also what's wrong with the physics that we are taught that stops us from understanding how things like teleportation, gravity wave manipulation, dimensional travel,
right.
Counter rotation, anyway, all that stuff works. What is it that is missing in our physics?
Well, the first thing we get rid of is particle. There's nothing particle about anything. This has been said before, and it's very true, and this is how it was presented to me, actually, before the person that said it ever did say. There's nothing particle about anything. Everything's a wave, all matter, everything. You know, the sofa, the computer, the desk, everything's a wave. And when you teleport, you're just converted more into a wave. Down to the atom. The atom is an over unity device. It is a motor generator. To not use the word really correctly, a perpetual device. It's an over unity device where it keeps going. It's given energy because it is tied to a time domain and it is tied to creation, a fourth dimension.
Right. Okay. And all right. Let's just pause that conceptual stream a second and go back over a couple of those things, because you hit that you said those magic words that I said tied to a time domain. You know, I play a song called Whipping Post, where I'm tied to the whipping post, but you're tied to the time domain. What do you mean? What's that mean? What does it mean? Tied to a time domain. First of all, what's a domain? Are there any other domains than time domains? Mm-hmm. And how do you tie something in whatever our domain might be to the time domain?
Tying that in is difficult, but let's...
let's start with domain. Let's start with a domain. What's
right.
a domain?
There's 13 dimensions. We utilize basically 10 of those. As living entities, we reside on the odd-numbered ones of those, the fifth dimension, the seventh dimension. If you're Hispanic, the ninth dimension. If you've elevated, as the Mayan calendar, or as Mayans do, things are, the universe is metric, base 10, things are divisible, or can be multiplied by 9. There are certain key aspects of dividing and multiplying, and basically, really, the universe is really just addition. Really, I mean, it really is as basic as it sounds. It really just is just addition. I mean, you want to measure a gravity wave, you would say do it on 37 millimeter, 37 plus 37 plus 37, 111. You do a square of six law. If you want to traverse or travel anywhere in the universe, you'd use a square of six law for travel, being that you need 7 points to travel. Since you know where you're at or where you're going, you really only need six.
That's exactly like in Stargate, isn't it?
It very much, Stargate was messed up, so very much things that were very real, been real in the industry for 40 years. Yeah, 6 times 6 times 6, 216 divided by 2, 108. 3 half of 6, 111.
3 half of 6.
Yeah, so 108, 109, 10, 11. And, you can pretty much triangulate position based on how the numbers add up and what your... striving for, what your intentions are.
And, so this is the thing, to travel from, because we're going to get back to, I'm going to tie you back to time domains in a minute, but in order to travel using the Mars device, was that a fixed entry and destination?
Yeah, that point of point of destination had a receiver there. That was the jump room. That was the structure that was on Mars.
Right, and that's Area 51. Is that right?
No. That's we'll have to go back into the.
That was the Hughes Building. You spoke about this before, isn't it?
Yeah,
the Hughes Building somewhere.
Yeah, that was the Howard Hughes Building at 999 North Sepulveda Boulevard. That was the. That was the main location for us to go to Mars. At the time, there wasn't any others, actually. I know this specifically. This was told by the guy at the front desk. I asked, are there any others? And I was actually asking about people. and he said, no, this is the only location for now, but you wait. There'll be... there'll be a lot of other places to go wherever you live, and I didn't know what he meant until about halfway through that sentence. I realized what he was answering, but in 1981 that was the only jump room, and I was kind of asking about people if there's anybody going, because my father was very intent. He says always important. Always go with a partner, a double. Phrase double came up when I was working for other companies, but always take somebody that you can be with to cover you and stuff.
Yeah,
and it was always important that if you saw somebody, you would partner up with them until somebody else came along. And very much the life and the people on Mars are very much physically, when they walk together, they literally huddle together.
They're in step. So it's basically, it's not a place you want to be alone.
No. Unless you're in a crater or in an underground facility or something, you don't want to be around. There's just certain places where, walled cities or craters where they're by nature designed to keep predatorial life out.
Right. And so
we've
gone through the jump room. Let's come back through the jump room and then back into the lab, right? To the analysis and back to the understanding of what is a domain and therefore what is a time domain. So you say that we've got 13 dimensions and we exist on the odd ones, which is all, something I've always wondered. Why is it like the third dimension, then we go to the fifth dimension? What's going on the fourth?
The third dimension is all about numbers. thinking just is. Fifth and seventh, you have imagination and you have development. And, you know, there's just basic laws. There's seven layers of spiritual layers that surround the earth. That those occur, seven layers, when a planet's fully developed and facilitated to harbor life and sustain life on a perpetual kind of development.
Right. Because it's interesting you talk about seven, because this is what I talk about a lot on my show, is this thing that I learned about 20 years ago called the seven rays. And they correspond with the seven notes and the seven colors and da-di-da-di-da. And they refer to qualities of these different frequencies in each band.
Yeah.
So, So in every octave,
there's nine chakras, correct?
That depends who you talk to. Some people say 12, some people say 9, some people say 7.
I'd say the people who say 9 and 12 are very developed.
Yeah. And then, you know, there's all these chakras in our hands and our feet and all this stuff, you know. But anyway, domains, tell us about domains.
Well, dimensions, there's 13 dimensions. There's, in relation to, as John Searle has pointed out, you can't have less than 12 for developing a gravity generator, 12 rollers or 12 of anything. The multiverse follows those laws. There's 13 dimensions. Time resides in the fourth dimension. This has also been depicted in some Twilight Zone movies. They got a lot of that part right.
Say that again. What happened in the Twilight Zone?
That they refer to the time domain as being in the fourth dimension. They actually got that right.
Right. So is it like we exist in the third and fifth and the fourth?
Well,
are on the opposite side of the wave or something.
Yeah, matter, you have to have at least three. We've heard this, and, you know, things come in threes, and you have to have at least three. And, but yeah, as we reside in the odd-numbered dimensions, spiritually and as people. We are on the seventh day the Lord rested. We are actually the number seven. You know, you take the square root of seven, not infinitely, but finitely, you have something left over for, you know, quite a few decimals, quite a few times. And, you know, we are seven. You know, when you divide seven by the square root, you have something left over for a certain amount of times. And, you know, as people, we are actually the number seven. You know, on the seventh day, the Lord rested, because the seventh day, or seven, there was people. For people to carry on the Lord's work and develop and create. We are co-creators.
Okay, so let's go back to the atom. Is it true that there are seven quantum layers?
Or
can they be more?
You're asking questions I just don't know.
Oh.
I'm sorry.
Yeah, because
I'm so sorry.
No, that's all right. You're very aware of the fractal nature of the universe, you know, as above, so below. So, you know, the solar system looks like the galaxy, and the atom, you're saying, looks like the solar system. Is that right?
Right. Yeah. Basically, the solar system and the galaxy is a gravity generator, as such it should be and or has to be. How many galaxies are there? How many black holes are there? How many galaxies are there? There always has to be, as this, you know, there's something sacrificial in the center, or, you know, there's a black hole, and that's a part of creation. That's the center of a gravity generator. Why is our galaxy shaped like a disc, like a UFO or a round vehicle? Is because that is the conducive shape of a gravity generator, or something that's producing a wave guiding or tuning to that platform, which is our galaxy. Which is why we have a supermassive black hole. We have a full effect gravity generator.
Okay, so it's generating gravity, right?
Yes.
Okay, a gravity generator generates gravity. And in what form does the gravity take, as far as we're concerned, out here on the outer spiral arm?
Well, it takes a form of a wave, comes out in a wave. It is, we are tuned to that gravity. We are spiritually... frequency, not that it's a frequency, but we do utilize a carrier. It utilizes a carrier. We tune to that carrier. We have certain frequencies that we, the side frequencies that we develop on, anywhere between 7.5 to around 11 hertz. The gravity. It being that our lifespan is what it is because we're tuned to that gravity. I kind of missing what you're asking.
Right. Yeah, sorry, you knocked your mic as well. So what I was saying is that you've got your so you say tying to a time domain, right? So we now established that a domain is like what you call a dimension, and a time domain is an even-numbered dimension.
Right.
Am I with you? And so how do you then tie something?
All right. Well, it's kind of in reflection or creation. Creation comes from a time domain, energy to mass event. It's taking energy or from that fourth dimension and creating... matter. It's energy becoming mass. One of the visual examples was World Trade Center, as I hold as a good example, or the John Hutchinson effect, is doing a scalar event, bringing energy or from that time domain and creating matter. And what happened with World Trade Center was that it created matter inside of matter, which is why the World Trade Center steel disappeared. That's 700 feet of World Trade Center steel.
So what we were talking about before is that the device they used was able to focus two beams. One that came down vertically and one that came across horizontally that were being reflected off space platforms or space-borne platforms or high-atmosphere-based platforms.
A round vehicle, a couple round vehicles, eight of them or so, forming a waveguide or an antenna.
So that would then take the scalar generator up into space and then back down again. And by focusing these two beams... you're virtually able to. It's like this is like the replicator in Star Trek, isn't it? The thing that turns matter into energy.
Actually, Star Trek. It was actually did it backwards to what teleportation is. Doing it like Star Trek, as Andrew Bishaga said, would kill you, and it would. It would stop the wave. One thing about all matter and people is, or teleportation is when you everything's a wave, you just convert it more into a wave. You're keeping that wave going. Any stopping in that wave destroys that matter or kills off whatever's teleporting.
So
or would try to. It wouldn't be teleporting, but whatever field that individual was in would. And that person wouldn't have a good day the next day. But it's very much same thing. Exactly what happened, it was that they did a crossover beam, a crossover section onto the World Trade Center, with the Taylor device, imagine is 88 kilometers deep, right off the between the Philippines and Guam, and you can actually Google Earth it. Did you want the coordinates on that? It's,
I'm sure that. Yeah, can you can you drop the? Have you got the coordinates? And I can drop them into the. Into the chat room, and people can do their own Google Earthing.
Yeah, as Google Earth boots up, here we go. Yeah, it's the Scalar device. It's 80 kilometers deep. You got to remember that gravity propagating a gravity wave. That it's a very long wave, and so you know, no matter the technology, well, sort of. This is not true, but for government and stuff, you're dealing with a very long wave, so the equipment is very large. Mm. You would what they built is it's right off a kind of a man-made island, and I'm doing this on the fly, sir. I'm trying to find it. I'm just scrolling Google Earth up, and I'm just scrolling what I.
That's good. I'm scrolling up and down my desktop to try and find that song that you gave me, which will play in half an hour's time. I hope there's enough of it. It looks quite small, but anyway.
Well, have you found it? Well, coming up. Where? good God.
Oh, I've found the song. What is this?
Oh, I found a spot.
There we go. It was just that moment.
Saturn Troia. That's they actually did a little test message to Saturn. Saturn, and this has been said by others. This part has been said by others, and is very true. I believe it to be true. But Saturn in another dimension actually has life. And for people that don't know, we have three suns in our solar system. Jupiter is a sun, Saturn is a sun, and then we have our sun, but technically right now we have four suns in our solar system. Those coordinates for that scalar device is latitude 20.4235.
Hang on, say that again. 24?
No, 20. Here, I'll copy and paste.
Yeah, copy and paste it into our chat, and then I'll pop that into the chat room there.
20.4240, and the longitude is +136.0781, and that is the scalar device. You'll notice that that device from the first longitudinal wave to the second primary coil is 0.8 kilometers. 0.81 actually, and that's very indicative of what a a gravitational wave would be 8 millimeters, 80 millimeters, or 88 millimeters, or if having to spin something very fast to produce a gravity generator, you would say take Mercury plasma and spin it at 160,000. RPMs.
So this is about numerical. It's really weird. You know, we're brought up with everything's measured to these decimal degrees, but when it comes to it, there are numbers that occur in these factors of 10, factors of 1,000, and they continue to be the same numbers. Like, you know, you got the 8, and then you have 88, and then 888, and these kind of numerical things that kind of look pretty, but actually turn out to have some kind of scientific or at least natural significance.
Jesus of Nazareth and Christmas. Yes. 888. Yeah, it all breaks down into language and everything. It's complete mind blowing what the truths are that reside there. I mean, you look, pulling energy from a time domain, is very suggestive in itself. Is even though the government still hardwired the teleporters out of safety instead of utilizing more of a free energy type thing, you still have to put some in. But they hardwired them because it was safer to do so. During this time period of 2012, is the holograms, gravity generators are subject to a sort of accidental unification. So the equipment and the source is really not reliable.
Is this to do with the superwave? The gravitational ribbon, the nexus.
A long time ago, the Lord lined up the gravity generator, the solar system, the galaxy, and lined up all the rollers. The John Searle SCG gravity generator lined up all the rollers in a specific way, mm-hmm. and knocked one into place. Knocked one into motion and started that gravity generator. At some point later on, that motor will line up again to where it originally started. All the rollers will be in the exact position as it were from day one.
Right.
And that's the 2012 period. And there's a kind of a drop-off, energetic drop-off point, a dead spot on that gravity generator or that roller motor.
Mm.
And that's what the 2012 period is.
Oh, hang on, I just got an insight.
Yeah.
So when you said that there's a dead spot, does that mean that where everything is, everything gets a chance to move outwards through that dead spot?
Yeah.
And thus make room for something in the middle there. Does that mean we're going to have another planet born out of the sun?
Or
the planets move out one bit?
Or maybe lose a few.
Or maybe lose a few when the sun gets too big. I've seen that.
Well, it doesn't. The sun is controlled by beings other than ourselves. Mm. That's a must. It's a fusion reactor, gravity generator, EM generator.
And it's a portal? Time portal for big ships?
No.
You're not allowed to say that.
For some it may be more conducive to be close to it, but not really. The center of our galaxy is, but it depends on what you're doing. It's such a vast array. You remember the shuttle, the space shuttle. Footage where it showed a very translucent disc going through or in front of the shuttle on the side.
Is that the tether incident?
Yes, the tether incident where you saw like a round vehicle going.
I saw millions of little white dots that were.
Skipping around. They were actually grabbing a free electron. The space has a lot of electrons, but it doesn't have quite a lot.
Hmm.
And, is a living entity, just as hydrogen is. And, there's other gases besides hydrogen that doesn't have an electron, but there's helium and other things. And what the round vehicles were doing was they were grabbing a free electron. It was like a party.
Right. So are these like the ionic trail from the space shuttle?
Yeah.
So these are like little fish that come along behind the boat and grab the bits.
Basically. And anyway, anybody that does a tethered satellite, you would have basically a copper foil. You would want as much displacement as possible. You wouldn't be running a wire, but you'd be running like a copper foil that would be a wire. And, that's, of course, reinforced with whatever, but basically what they did is they burnt it out or overloaded it. And being that it was, 50 miles in length, fiber optics that were put in that also for direct communication was actually made at Air Logistics in Pasadena, and which also happens to be a former employer of mine.
So you were there when they made it?
No, but but they were doing all those projects at the time. They were consigned to do it, and I was very happy and excited to be a part of that, and that was I don't know if it went to that particular project. For all I know, it got laid out in the middle of the desert, but it had to be 53 miles long, and it had to be very uniform. The reinforcement fiberglass braiding had to be, so many strands per strand, and there had to be so many strands, and it couldn't be deficient, and had to be very uniform. There couldn't be any breaks, and it was a very tedious job that they put me on the glass heating end for drying off the strand and keeping the temp uniform. And that was it was an assignment, and that lasted about 2 months. And my attentive value wasn't very high. But I'm full. So anyways, the tethered incident was actually round vehicles grabbing a free electron.
Right.
And,
Tracy, our co-host on Wolf Spirit Radio, she was very into that video and got lots of various shots from NASA about it.
The craft that was in a mass travel actually went through the shuttle. It actually looks in the footage like it went through the shuttle. It actually did pass right through the shuttle.
Oh.
And what it was in a higher energy state in a massless state of travel. If you put something in a higher energy state, you could take a TV set or a desk and put it in a higher energy state. The amount of energy in the book of matches would make it go faster than the speed of light. That law does hold true, that mass cannot travel faster than the speed of light. That's very true. And the Grays figured out, of course, massless state of travel, and is a lot more safer to do. And and they're also mastered true instant teleportation. Going from point A to point B truly instantly without time. And, that's a pretty neat trick in itself. I mean, it really is.
So when you're talking about that, how do you steer them? How do you steer a teleporter? If we had technology...
I don't know.
All right. Okay, then.
You have to have a receiver for the way that I do it, but there's ways of having a round vehicle above you and, teleport you down. Basically, it's the same repeater, double bouncing idea, is that whatever you propagate out in front of you, you just doppel or double up on that end, and to make another halfway point, and you could teleport without having a receiver on the end, and that would be one way to do it. That's the trick I do with a flash gun, which is a very cool device, with a very alien device. And
you got broken up again? That's the trick you do with what?
With a flash gun. The flash gun is a very real device and is a very alien technology.
This is the thing to make people forget things.
Yeah, you can knock them out with it. I mean, you can cancel out the, people operate on a gravitational wave. Our thoughts propagate instantly. As the Lord said, I hear your thoughts instantly, being that your thoughts propagate on the gravitational wave.
Right.
And the propagation of that gravitational wave, it propagates instantly from here to a million light years away. Gravity will more or less get there instantly. It does on teleportation, for the way that we were doing it, does follow that time rolls in. Going to Mars back in 81 took over 15 minutes. You know, back in 84, it was less than 10 minutes. You know, it was 8 minutes to Mars, literally.
Wow.
And you know, that was the only time where you could actually have three or four people in the teleporter at once, and there would be enough air to make the trip. You know, that was a big concern in 81. Only one or maybe two people, if they were trained, could go. And in 81, two people in the elevator, that was dicey. I mean, you had to be very aware of just staying calm. And you know, I wasn't allowed to. You know, when I teleported the first time, I had to teleport alone. And it was, you know, is this your first time? Yeah. He said, yeah, I'm gonna send you alone. And luckily, nobody else is. Here, he kind of contradicted himself. He basically said, you know, basically, I guess it was the first for the year, for the day, or for the time opening the program and stuff. But we were the first matches, I guess, is what they were. Maybe he was saying, but he says that nobody else has gone today, and then he said that other people had gone, and I presented it very correctly like that. That it was just odd, you know, remembering. Was that Andy and Courtney Hunt had already gone ahead, and there's, you know, Courtney had signed his name as Court, where it was very much enforced that you signed your name, you put your social security number, and you put the day's date, and you spelled out your full name. And Courtney signed it Court, not as Courtney. He signed it as Court.
Is that a French joke? And
I don't know. I don't know.
Court means short.
That's funny. I didn't know that. That's funny.
Yeah.
It's Yeah, but he signed it, and Andy he signed it first before Andy signed it, because Andy was, my signature is right below Andy's, and Andy signed it Andy Bishago, and he did not put a D in there, but it was good enough, and the day's date September 19th. And that was, you know, I shouldn't say the day's date. This gets me killed, I think. But
it was sometime. You may have been, yeah, you know, within a couple of days of that, you know, maybe.
Yeah. Well, there's a lot of controversy. I'm just not quite sure on it. But I mean, Andy contends that it was a week after his birthday, and it was definitely in that period, because he had talked to other people and I didn't know that he talked to other people before ever saying this. So I mean, our stories completely congeal. Our testimonies are completely support each other's entirely, and you know, and Barry Satoro and Regina Dugan and myself in a picture, you know, really corroborates that.
So,
yeah, we're not making stuff up at all.
So when you were, so let's just lay this out. When you were a kid, you were involved in a government project which involved sending people to Mars. You traveled to Mars more than once. You also saw a young man who was called Barry Zotero, who is now known as Barack Obama, who's the president of the United States as we speak.
President.
Yeah, that's right. he's the resident. Anyway, that's another story. And here's the thing, that you understand how the technology works. And this is what we're kind of dancing around this evening, to get these concepts, because in order for these things to work, they're not using a different physics model than the universe. You know, it's like You have been working with the people who understand the true nature of the universe rather than what we're given, which is a limited view, which is why we never get anywhere or anything.
Yeah, yeah.
And it's been part of the government... it's been part of the corporate cover-up by the... can we say the Rockefeller faction of the Illuminati?
Yeah, it's the perpetual SUV $5 a gallon thing. I mean, but it is meant to keep the masses happy. I like that program actually, but yeah, I mean, really, for people not able to at the time, people had gone above and beyond the call of duty to keep people happy, but the evil part of it, the Rockefeller Foundation, is just ludicrous. But they kind of want to permanently dumb you down.
Yeah. So they basically taken some of the laws of physics.
They want to stick your body right next to Denver International Airport and use you as a shield.
Oh, there's a thing. There's a lot of fires in Colorado at the moment. Do you think some people want from the underground want to have a picnic?
They had a picnic.
Yeah.
I think we just saw that. Yeah. Isn't that just odd that there's a lot of fires going on?
Yeah.
Randall?
Yeah. Gets people and out of the area, doesn't it?
Yeah. Localizing it. Did you notice right around the Denver International Airport there aren't any?
Yeah. Funny that.
Yeah, just odd. any human... Reverb.
Hang on. Oh, hang on.
Any human shields out there? Say you stick your body above a underground facility, and that way they can't be scaled. You know, water makes a really good shield for a scalar device being implemented. If they had... let's say, for example... Say you had an underground submarine tunnel system that, say, went from Monterey in a straight line straight to off of Martha's Vineyard on the East Coast and would, say, would be right at 41.1441 by minus 66.0222. Let's say that if you had an underground city that was right next to it in Shelburne County, which is in the middle of the ocean, and Shelburne County was named that because even though there's no island or anything there, it's a fishing residence where they shrimp or fish or whatever. But what it really is, Shelburne County is actually an underground city that's 100 miles wide, and it's off the coast, east coast of the United States. It's right next to Nova Scotia, actually. It's just south of there. The water actually makes a great shield, which is why you can imagine seeing a whole bunch of cooked dolphins, if people remember.
Yes.
There we go. Military testing.
Yeah.
Somebody was attacking a city. All the listeners out there, want to research cooked dolphins and research the location as to where that was at, and that will be a story in itself. If you get that to a GP, he will... this will turn into a very, very, very big story. The city, being that there's not any oceans in Colorado, what they could have put was some, water, but they couldn't get it deep enough in Colorado. But look at where all the fires are. And you imagine that submarine tunnel system actually goes right by Denver International Airport. In fact, very much almost goes right under it. Isn't that just strange?
Yeah, well, Denver International Airport is a very interesting story. All, you know, there's a thousand stories to be told about that. You know, how come they've got such a big airport? How come it took? They've got all these cranes and everything for years and years and years and years and years. And like, where does all the dirt go? And all those other questions. And the relationship between that and the fires. You know, I was jesting earlier about the picnic. Yeah. There's often times when other inhabitants of this earth, let's put it that way, that are not that are intelligent but not mammalian, let's put it that way, sometimes come up out of their underground situations, and the fires are there to keep the humans out of the way.
Yeah. You could think of humanoid, but more lizard-like.
Mm-hmm.
You know, how would you get, like, a whole city, like, say, let's take example, like, maybe New Orleans,
mm-hmm.
which might have been, like, a feeding testing ground. Localize people into one area, see if they can be controlled into one area. Mm-hmm. People disappearing that actually never turned up. What was the program with that? That was actually supposed to be, instead of these prisoners, 5,000 being executed, they were actually supposed to be the meal, and all the prisoners were going to be released out of that one jail that all of a sudden just lost all its prisoners during that flood, and one female, McKinley, she came forward. With that there was 5,000 bodies all with bullet holes in the back of the head, but they all happened to just be the state prisoners.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. They were actually supposed to be the meal. The event never, being a lot of the good work that a lot of people put in place, never took place. But, yeah, that opens up a whole new
domain of knowledge.
Yeah, let's get to the scalar device.
Yeah. we were talking earlier on the phone before the show that you were showing me the location of the scalar instrument, which was used to reformat the reality inside the World Trade Center buildings. Have I got that about right?
Yeah.
Okay.
That was basically the building was hollowed out with the longitudinal wave with one of the crossover beams went straight down the middle of the World Trade Center, and what they did is they had a waveguide, and that waveguide was that hexagonal shaped device that was on the barge that was serving multifunctional role, was that it was actually revising or recording the events, which will show up in incredible resolution. I mean, almost perfect. And they were recording for posterity. That would explain why, where did these images come from? You know, what camera angle was this? Who filmed this? And it was like really good footage. It was a chronovised image.
Right.
Images. Data.
Okay. We've got to talk about chronovisors in a minute, but you got the chronovised image. Muggsy was always talking about this barge that had the pyramid on top of it, and it gets photoshopped out.
Yeah, it was actually an octagonal waveguide. It's basically a teleporter. Here's the funny thing I was telling her about it, was they actually teleported in the second crossover section for that scalar device. I was actually teleported in. No joke.
You were?
No, they were.
Right.
That scalar device,
all right.
that second crossover beam was actually teleported in.
Wow.
And what they did is they instead of waveguiding it, they teleported it in. And they just crisscrossed it down the building wherever the first primary wave was, and that crossover section produces a pure electromagnetic effect. And what it does is it does a a scalar energy to mass event to where it brings energy in from a time domain and does creation. What it does is it's an energy becoming mass inside of mass. So the no two things can occupy the same space at the same time. The mass that is created inside the other, the ultra energy, the energy to mass event has a higher energy state, so it wins over the lower energy state value World Trade Center steel. So it disassociates and basically turns to dust. What happened was that the oscillators, elements are comprised of oscillators and rotors. The oscillators are the odd-numbered elements in that periodic table. The rotors are the even. The oscillators would say be aluminum, element 13, or manganese, element 25, that which you would find in chemtrails. Barium, element 56, would say be a rotor. The way that it comes into play is that for all the basic effects, it has to be two oscillators and one rotor to be able to produce an effect. Yes.
Two oscillators and one rotor.
Yeah.
That means that there's got to be. Hang on, let me just see if we get it right. An oscillator is odd.
Element 56 is divisible by 4, so therefore it is a rotor oscillator by law.
Right.
But it serves as a rotor. And what it did was that the World Trade Center steel turned to dust, and the dust that they saw was not the same volume as what the steel beams would have been.
Hmm.
What they saw was they saw the carbon, element 6, rotor, and they saw the chromium, and they saw the nickel, element 28, all even-numbered elements. Chromium is 24. And that was the dust that they saw in the air. The iron actually got returned back to a time domain. It got converted back to pure energy and returned back to creation. That's where that iron went. What the government actually told England, or the Queen, was that the gold had disappeared in the scalar device that was used. Gold is an oscillator, and a very odd one at that. Element 79 actually wouldn't have disappeared. It was, as everyone knows, trucked out. But anyways.
Out of the bottom of Building 7, which mysteriously burst into flames as well.
Yeah, and that gets spoken for the lack of action and funding from the United States government at the time when we needed it. And so that's a little humor on my part.
All right, on that note, because we're at the top of the hour, and you might need to visit the little boy's room or fill up your coffee or something like that. I've queued up your tune. Okay. So this tune is by a band called Rush. Is that correct?
Correct.
And Rush, I remember Rush from the 1970s. They had a guy who played a double neck guitar, two guitars at once, and he played a synthesizer with his foot. Was so short sighted he couldn't see beyond the microphone stand when he stood on stage. They were a three piece, and he played the bass synthesizer with his toe or something like that. Am I on on with that still?
Oh yeah, Geddy Lee.
And this is the band that we're about to hear. This is Rush, brothers and sisters. Hold on to your seatbelts.
Thank you.
And welcome back. That was a little bit of Rush. Oops, hang on. That was Mozart's Adagio. So, I'm speaking with my guest, William Stillings, Chrononaut, Chronovisor. What's a Chronovisor? You said something earlier. You said, oh, that's just the Chronovisor image. What's a Chronovisor?
Chronovisor is what... Andrew Bashago has spoken about readily. In the beginnings, there was two priests at the Vatican, Ernetti and, I'm just drawing a complete blank. Anyways,
okay.
they were viewing past and future events on a device that they were building called a Chronovisor. And
What are two guys in the Vatican doing messing about with time? Oh, there!
Oh, no.
Okay, maybe we shouldn't mention the Vatican.
Whenever we mention some sort of political figurehead from England, my computer was acting up and we got cut off like no other.
That's right. So we mustn't mention the Queen. We mustn't mention the Pope.
Your router crashed.
We mustn't mention the Vatican, we mustn't mention Israel, and we mustn't mention the Jesuits or the Archons. Okay, we mustn't mention any of those.
No.
We're still near. Anyway, meanwhile...
they built it. Ernelli built a device where they literally saw images of Jesus of Nazareth being crucified on the cross. They were hearing conversations that they had with each other that they hadn't had yet.
Sorry. This is a new concept to me.
Pellegrino Ernetti was one of the... priest, he was actually depicted in the famous Exorcism that movie was based on, The Exorcist. And the reason why he was depicted was because he was very famous for his sideline work of the Chronovisor, I believe.
Did he get this? He got this from the military, yeah?
No. They correlated the chanting and the prayers the harmonics of the prayers of blessing things into that is basically a universal code for
hang on, you broke up. You broke up.
I'm sorry.
You broke up. And you said that it's basically a universal what?
It's a universal code key, basically, for better health, for making things healthier. You know, for Reiki, where all that stuff comes from.
Mm-hmm.
It's basically just it's seeing future events before they happen, and this was the whole premise of what Andrew Bishago experienced in the early 70s of being sent physically, you know, more or less mind and body, but he's basically plasma confined, and he was sent to past events, witnessing Gettysburg Address. He was pictured in the famous Gettysburg Address photo of November 19th, 1863.
The boy with the big shoes.
Yes. He was, I mean, that is him. Mm. You look at his childhood pictures, that is that kid. Mm. It is the only kid in the photo with a 1970s haircut. And it is the only kid that really looks very healthy, you know, mind and body and everything. I mean, it's very, very much Andrew Bishago. He was sent back in time and physically appeared enough to have his picture taken. He was, that was the more involved version of chronovising, of, you know, being able to view events. The reason why they used kids was because adults would affect the observable universe. You know, it's a fixed and it's an observable universe. You look at it and therefore it acts differently. You know, you look at the light, you put a sensor on and it does something different. Same effect. Kids didn't seem to affect it, being able to, they were able to immerse themselves and to view the events and to fully accept that.
Right. So it's something about our ability to accept reality as we see it.
Yeah.
It changes reality.
Are their own person. That's right. We create matter as beings, as people. We make matter real.
Mm-hmm.
As the Lord said, without people, the world would be a hell.
So this is part of the new paradigm as well, is that we create our reality by our intentions.
Yes.
And I've been experimenting with that in the last few weeks, you know, trying to... So I decided to manifest myself a car, and that day I got stopped by the police and my car was taken away by the police. So that's the universe saying, okay, we're going to get you a car.
Focusing on just pushing things across the table.
Yeah.
That works best. It's a basic.
Yeah.
There's lots of different ways of doing things, and it's some good effect, not good effect. Pros and cons to it.
Oscillators, rotors, stators. No, I keep saying stators. There are no stators. Oscillators and rotors. Elements that have geometric realities, don't they?
Yes.
There is something about the platonic solids that relates to atoms and their beingness. Is there something about that in, like, the nucleus or something?
Yeah, it's the geometric shape that makes things individually different. It's the amount of protons, of course, and the amount of electrons determines how that inherent gravity behaves. Just multitude of variations. We do already have all the elements to be able to do pretty much everything.
Mm.
And that's all been provided. It's there's a geometric island of stability that has been brought forward by Bob Lazar. And those are we get into tones and harmonics and octaves. Just we discussed earlier off air that there was that the free energy devices, like taking two people can do this experiment at home.
Yeah, tantalum capacitors.
Yeah, take two tantalum capacitors and hold them about 4 millimeters apart, and plus to plus, blah blah blah, and you can measure a voltage out, and those are receivers. Just as the Earth and the solar system and the galaxy is a gravity generator receiver, the Earth is a receiver of gravity, is a receiver of energies, and that type of rod technology is a freer source of energy, and it's just a nice little home experiment that you can do, and I've been having fun. About a year ago, was really into building an inductive oven and filling it full of nitrogen and making my own compressed ceramic rods and you know, baking them and everything, and just kind of location and money and everything. So, but basically, you can imagine they'd be about 88 millimeters long, eight millimeters wide. And you hold it 4 millimeters apart. Those are a receiver, and great for powering light bulbs and motors.
So how many volts would you get out of one of these little jobbies?
I actually don't know.
Right. Well, it would light an LED, yeah.
Oh yeah, yes.
But
yes.
It wouldn't power a laptop. Would it power a laptop?
I wouldn't say LED. No, it wouldn't. It would have enough energy to power a laptop, but you won't be able to power a laptop with it. You won't be able. You'll be able to run light bulbs and motors. There's a conversion that you can do. You know, photovoltaic conversion. Pretty simplistic, and the technology's there to do it. But it won't run a computer, but it will run an AC unit. It'll run for a house. It'll run a heater. You know, you have to hook up a 9-volt source for the electric thermostat. But there's a lot of free energy applications.
Yeah.
You know, you're not going to do that with the two capacitors. So, you know, you might be able to light a very, 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 very tiny light bulb, but don't count on it with the capacitors. But you get out your voltmeters.
But it'll trigger your voltmeter, right? That's good enough. That's good enough to know as a principle that is possible. So what if you stack the load of tantalum capacitors together?
Yeah. Well, that's a good question. You know, people. You know, maybe people can call into you and verify like 1.06 or something.
Yeah.
And you know, I'd like to see the experimental fact, the interaction with people. Yeah. Why I'm not answering.
No, somebody but, in the chat room just put jewel thief. I know what a jewel thief is.
Yes!
And it's not jewel as in the gems, but it's J-O-U-L-E, which is, it's a geek joke, a jewel thief.
Yeah.
But essentially it's a circuit which has a coil in it which creates a expanding magnetic field, and then suddenly it cuts the power to it, and the field collapses back into the coil and sends a pulse of energy.
There's a sort of a free hidden energy in there.
Yeah,
the rods work a little bit better than that, but the you know, we get to the islands of stability is, you know, you look at hydrogen, or actually lithium. You can look at antimony, or mostly bismuth. Bismuth starts to have enough protons for everything, but you know, 83 protons, and that's in a 2, 6, 12, 8, 22, 32, 1 configuration. And that's a geometrically stable island. You look at Bob Lazar's, that would be 2, 6, 12, 8, 22, 32, 32, 1 one extra proton.
Hang on, say that again. Hang on, I'm just going to count those levels. So hang on. Let me just explain to the audience what we're just talking about. We're talking about the number of electrons in the shells in this atom of an element that was discovered by Bob Lazar, and is it known as Lazarium or something? I don't know. Okay, reel off, Brett, go for it.
Two? Well, you have islands of geometric stability. For Bob's element 115, you would have 8 energy shells. You'd have 7 for bismuth. You just would increase by 32. And then you have element 147, or mass 405, which is actually an element that I have and am in possession of. And it's just under a cubic centimeter and weighs 26.3 grams.
Hang on. You've got your own element. How'd you make a block of it then?
I didn't make anything, sorry.
Did you?
I came across.
You came across it.
Yeah.
Does it by any chance come from a solar system that's different from ours?
Well, from what I understood is that it actually came from the front end of a submarine.
No.
Yes. Imagine slapping something that has a very gravitational more intense difference to it, like bismuth does. And, you know, when this element is actually just in its natural state, which is, you know, pretty much all it can be, when it's in the presence of a gravity generator, it actually levitates. It is very naturally tuned to that and does some pretty unusual things. You can imagine if you slap this on the front of a submarine, that submarine could all of a sudden, you know, be able to be a submerged hull that could do 300 miles an hour plus. Yeah, not to not do it in knots or anything, but you know, when nothing comes into contact with the front of it, and there's no resistance, you know, all of a sudden things can go a lot faster underwater. And what it does is basically repels anything with a proton that all matter. And
you say that again? You got broken up.
It basically repels anything with a proton, and that's all matter. So I mean, it'll push
anything
air
with a proton. All right, okay.
Yeah, it'll push air out of the way. It'll push water, and you know, you put that on a submarine, you all of a sudden have a very fast moving submarine. So you put that say on the USS Ronald Reagan, and the USS Ronald Reagan can do like 90 miles an hour.
So what, you just stick one in front of your car?
Yeah, you'd get better mileage.
Yeah, there's a thought.
And
there's a application for this stuff.
Yeah, you bend the radar around.
Yeah, even better.
It would, yeah.
Would you stick to other cars? That might be a bit bad.
I want the more massless, the less it bends. So, you know, even light has a weight, but it doesn't. It doesn't do it enough to affect its visual looks at all. So people ask, it's like, no, I don't know. That's I mean, I've gotten some shills that have who have tried to ask certain questions, and they just kind of went away when I started going into the dynamics of it. But you run a gravity generator, and the thing will float, and it does. And actually, gravity lenses I specialize in making out of glass and bismuth.
I actually
am a specialist when it comes to making the tops or bottoms of round vehicles. So if you're building a round vehicle, people, I'm the person to consult for aligning and lens. I'm your specialist. Thank you. Stillings, hire.
A man for hire, William Stillings. Oh, do you have, by the way, a website that where you sort of distribute your news and stuff and things that you've learned?
The website is Andrew Bishago's website. Either go to projectpegasus.net or projectmars.net. those are the key places for anyone and everyone to learn pretty much everything there is to learn about the whole inside industry and what people have experienced and went through. Andrew has gone through the real raw basic learnings of the whole industry. He has been time residualed like no other. He has gone through a lot of the early basic equipment that my father and I feared as far as residuals and time issues or time residual issues that really affect your health.
Mm.
And I mean, he's gone through the brutal early beginnings of all that equipment, all the time travel equipment. I mean, I've done my share of time travel, and physically we cannot go back into the past. The grays protect that. We can go forward in time though, and I've done my fair share of that. I read in the paper about Fukushima 4 years before it happened and wrote about it, and that was the the blog that I wrote. Japan earthquake 2011, and Will Elson, and that just talked about what I read about in the paper that one day when I got forwarded 4 years in time, and that was in 2007, so I wrote it in 2007, and couldn't quite discern what was going on. I knew reactors had blown up, and that they were. I was kind of momentarily when I was there. I was like, when the hell did this happen? And I'm like, oh yeah. And I was kind of just stuck on finding out what was around me, who was around me, and what was going on. And people weren't working in the store that I knew everyone that worked in there. It was all new people. A friend, someone that I knew that I didn't go over and talk to was sitting right out front. He wasn't in uniform. He was just in plain clothes. Had a skateboard out. Had his had a little iPod thing that was outdated now, but he was using it. I talked with him and I checked with him, and he actually, I use this little iPod thing, and I'm like, yeah, I know you do. I saw you. You're at Starbucks. He goes, yeah, I still go there, and so we talked, and I told him the story, and he goes, I know. I said, I read about that then, and he goes, what did you think about it? He says, well, I hadn't thought about it until you just now called, but I remember thinking a little bit, and then he just got busy with stuff, so he wasn't too enthralled. But, got forwarded. It was a very much like a kind of like a teleport, but it wasn't. There was no distortion, and things just kind of narrowed a little bit. It was done very well, and very, I mean, beyond professional. And it was a very sunny day to kind of a very damp, musky, cold day. And I just continued walking to where I was going, and then when I started walking back, which there's a story there, but it got real sunny and warm again. And I wrote down as quickly as I could. Are you still there?
Yeah, I'm listening very intently.
Oh, cool. I wrote down exactly what I saw, pretty much what I read. Remember what I read in the paper. What the paper said, that the earthquake, that there was piles of wood that were 100 feet tall, or something like 50 to 100 feet tall, just incredible of housing timber, and all sorts of things, and so I included that and wrote about it and tried to discern. I was desperately searching for answers in my personal life as to what was going on. Why was I being why was everybody approaching me every 10 minutes from the agency and everything? Mm. And there was one lady that I'd only talk to her. And when I was at the library the day that I wrote that, she said it was time to go make history. And she goes, can I ask what you're working on right now? And I said, actually, I'm just going to go write an article about something I saw. And she goes, what is it? And I said, something about an earthquake. And she just had that you know, that very proper, all too knowing look. And she goes, you go make history. And she goes, I think I will. Yeah, like, I think I will. She was, she didn't, you know, she's like standoffish and observant. When I got in there, everybody and their brother was looking at me when I walked in. And I could see that there was like three observers that were at different computers, keeping an eye on me, mostly a female, younger group, about 20 years of age. And they were observing. They were, as I found out later, industry. And but I'm not gonna mention those names. All right, sorry, I sidetracked.
Yep.
Blah blah blah.
Meanwhile, back at gravity generators. So gravity generators. You're talking about the galaxy being a gravity generator, the solar system being a gravity generator. That the Searle effect generator is like a microscopic version of a solar system, as it were, or a galaxy, and that it has three rings of rollers, and between the rollers is a large ring, and there are three of those, and the outer ring goes one direction, and the rollers make the next inner ring go the other direction, and
all the rollers roll in the same direction.
They all roll in the same direction. Everything rolls in the same direction. Anti-clockwise.
Yes. Yes. And it's basically an auto-step transformer. So it's an amplifier. It's everything, really.
Put it on your serial. So if it does all these right, so. Sorry, I couldn't help it.
Yeah, it goes with everything. I mean, really, you spend 10 times a second. It's an inverter. I mean, you convert DC to AC on the fly. 60 hertz.
Right. And, it's got coils in it as well. And do the coils drive the motor faster? No.
No, the coils are used to keep the rollers on. Even though the rollers will stay anyways when it's in motion, you do need something to keep the roller. I mean, the rollers will not touch the ring; they'll levitate. You know, they're holding vertical, and they'll hold into place, and there'll be a separation about a millimeter, and they'll just levitate there. But when it's rolling, it keeps it on, and keeps them from flying off. Otherwise, they would fly off at certain variations of speed. There's that drop off point where they would fly off, and it would be no good. Mm. I mean, you can't chip these at all. And remember, this thing's running horizontal, so I mean it's laying flat. And the rollers are sticking and levitating, you know, not coming into contact, but being held in place on that torsion or the I hate getting shortage of words. I kill radio, sir. I kill it.
All right, hang on. Take a deep breath. Let me just try and reflect that back. So you got these rings that are spinning around, but the problem is that you know you've got. They are spinning vertically to themselves, and they're distributed around between large rings. There are rollers, and then there are large rings.
Yeah.
And
large rings are made exactly the way the rollers are. They're just larger, and they're comprised of four elements. You have a neodymium core. You have a plastic. Basically nylon dielectric, you know, and bismuth would actually serve very good for a dielectric. You do a few things to it, if you do it right, the stuff I make actually looks like a kind of a greenish concrete, and you can compress it and make it a ceramic.
Mm. Do you cast
and
them?
This, there's a trick to doing a good old John Hutchison, basically cutting on wave or cutting on frequency. And that that would be really very talented, and I look forward to the next 20 years after the SCG is fully accepted by society as being what it is, a fully functional device and a wonderful device.
Can you make them small?
No, they're basically dictated on massive elements, so they're dictated on size. It's either going to be big or
huge.
Or half a kilometer in size, yeah. I mean,
okay, so you can't have a little baby one that I could put in my rucksack to make it lighter. This is what I'm, this is what I'm
with.
You know,
with John Searle's SCG, you either have, I believe you have three selection of sizes, it's going to be about, I believe, 25 meters in size, or it's going to be the next size up is going to be about half a kilometer in size. Wow. Which is huge. I mean, enormous. Or it's going to be half a city in size.
Right. Okay, so
no joke.
I'll stick with a small one then.
Look at the one that was made or crashed 10,000 years ago, the Dropa stones.
Ah.
They were actually a mercury amalgamated lithium 6 motor, and I know this for a fact. Mm-hmm. I actually have a sample.
Uh-huh.
That was given to me in a little plastic bag, and it's actually a lithium 6 mercury amalgamated Dropa stone. John Searle SCG motor. Mm. And that's
and so if you compared the scale of that to the scale of John Searle's SCG motor, what would you say the size of this particular gravity generator motor was?
I would say it was nearing 100 meters in size.
Right.
Yeah.
So I suppose you could really envisage one that was a planet size as well. Well, I suppose you'd call that a planet, wouldn't you?
Yeah, but they'll find out later that there's not enough material or elements to do it in that form. Mm. The SCG is the greatest for the next 200 to 300 years sustainable device that pretty much takes all the bickering out of the world's needs or problems, really, as far as all that. But I mean, really, I mean, you do a planet sized there's just not enough elements to go around, and there's other
ways of doing stuff.
It's just, I'm not gonna go in that direction. I'm not going that Scott.
So that's fine. So okay. So where were we? We were talking about the going back to the geometry of the atom, and so we've got three kinds two kinds of atom that belong in. What's interesting, you know, you're talking about these odd and even atoms, and then you're talking about odd and even domains, and it sounded very much like the seven rays teachings, because on the first third, fifth, seventh ray, those are the mental rays, and the second, fourth, and six are known as emotional rays.
Yeah, or the material.
Yeah, like the hard rays and the soft rays. That's in the qualities.
Yeah, I mean they all interact. They all have something to do with everything. But the
octave
seventh. Yeah, the octaves of bismuth is, you know, there's 300 plus elements in the periodic table. Mm-hmm. You know, we, you know, it's not really a conspiracy, just based on our phase of gravity and where we're at on the motor, you know, we can't really, you know, element 115 can actually, it can, you know, you get a couple gravity generators around vehicles, you can cancel out and be able to facilitate to you know, transmute or to create, or, you know, to make that element.
So you can only make element 115 in a zero gravity field, would you say?
It's not zero, it's being out of the phase of the gravity generator receiver, or you kind of have to go to a couple special points outside the solar system, and for other elements, element 179 just can't even be created, I believe, in the galaxy at all. And it's one of the elements, but 211 can be, I believe. I don't know. It's a guessing game as far as that.
Right. Okay. But, I've got another question. Mm-hmm. This material that you were talking about on the front of a submarine, they also said it went on front of a warship.
147.
They say it's mined from the moon.
Could that
be possible?
Do you know why there's a lot of titanium dust on the moon?
No.
Because
the moon's made of titanium.
No, titanium. Well, it's a rotor, but it also doesn't hold an electron. It doesn't deal with an electron too well, so it's actually discarded as garbage after the mining, or the, you know, disassociating John Hutchison effect type of mining style vacuum cleaner vehicles that they have there. And it doesn't deal with an electron too well, and it's actually kind of is discarded. And that's why there's a lot of titanium dust on the moon. Inhaling it isn't the greatest thing either.
No, don't know what to say.
But that's why there's actually a lot of that dust there is because of the mining that was done long before we ever showed up. And I remind everybody, yes, we went to the moon. Our astronauts did go to the moon. The question is how they got back off the moon. That's the question that they're hiding. There's actually Wernher von Braun went nuts when the diagrams presented to him depicted a lunar lander that had a glass bottom, because with all gravity generators you cannot put an EM non-EM effect through metal. So the tops and bottoms of round vehicles are glass or plastic-like with a sunglass kind of metallized layer to it. The atoms aren't contacting each other, but you can see through it. And remember, one of the laws on metals, non-metals, transitional, whatever, no matter how thin you cut a metal, you cut it down to one atom thick, if they're touching, or, you know, the illusion of touching, then you cannot see through it. If you can see through it, then it's not touching. No matter how thin you cut a piece of metal, you will never be able to see through it if all the atoms are together. So, and there's tricks around that too, as you all know. But the tops and bottoms around vehicle are plastic or glass-like and have to be by law. Mm. So, you know, that's where the glass bismuth lensing speciality for me is. So, back to geometric stable elements, is we know that bismuth is a geometrically stable element. Element 115, Bob Lazar's element. My element 147, mass 405, is geometrically stable. Element 179, element 211, element 243, element 275, element 307, geometrically stable. These are elements that would have the proton energy position level of 2, 6, 12, 8, 22, 32, 1 for bismuth, and just add 32 consecutively for each element above. There's a law, a guideline that they use in the military that Bob Lazar very much pointed out, and it goes to the tune of helium, element 2, oxygen, element 8, calcium, element 20, nickel, element 28, tin, element 50, lead, element 82, and goes up. If you discern and read between the lines, it would be helium is element 2, the distance, the number value between helium and oxygen, oxygen being 8, 2, 8, 6, so 6 separating helium and oxygen. Oxygen to calcium is 12, oxygen being 8, calcium being 20, minus 12, and nickel being element 28 from calcium 20, so 2, 6, 12, 8, and 28 to 10, element 50, 22. So there's a guideline that you, helium, oxygen, calcium, nickel, tin, lead, element 114. Well, element 114 produces the gravity that oscillates at 100 times a second for round vehicles, and that produces the gravity. And that that pulse is 100 times a second.
About there, isn't it?
Yeah. And basically, it's actually kind of self-regulating. It's just natural tune that way as the universe is metric.
Say that again. You got broken up.
As the universe is metric based.
Yeah, that's weird, isn't it?
It's based on metric. Yeah, base 10.
Yeah.
But I've said that before. I'm not in a good speaking mind right now.
You're doing very, very well. You have spoken, and I think we've managed to. I feel that I've managed to cut some of this meat to the bone here, and to really get what you're talking about.
Could I cover my past a little bit?
Yeah. You've got about
3 minutes.
12 minutes.
All right. 1979, I did my first teleportation through the Navy and through basically my father being inducted or us being involved in the CIA through Lockheed Skunk Works. That was through the company agency. And my first teleportation experience was out of Sylmar, and that went to someplace in the middle of the desert. I wonder, I very much believe that my father helped me with that in a lot of different spiritual ways, which was utterly amazing. But 1981, I did some inner city. I think in 1980, I did some inner city jumps, which wasn't about a half mile down the road. It was building to building. In 87, 88, there was actually an accident, and it's not related to Area. Area 51.
Sorry, you broke up again.
In the late 1980s, there was an accident, and it is not related to Bob Lazar in any way or Area 51. This is a personal teleportation, deliberate thing that occurred, but it will not make the airs. I will not talk publicly. I will say that I had to be assisted in every way, shape, and form. In fact, basically put in a field and carried, almost.
Right. Sounds.
So, anyways.
Weird. Yeah. Okay.
In 1981, I did my first teleportation to went to the planet Mars. Yes, the planet, and that took over 15 minutes. That was like 18-minute trip. And when I got there, Andrew Bishago and Courtney Hunt were standing right outside the elevator when the doors opened. One of the featured notes that I was very interested in the technology and just completely enthralled is one of the things that I noticed was before the blast of air came on from the fan from the top that was kind of chilled you and was very forceful, and it forced a lot of air into the elevator. There was a side lighting rail that was receded into the fake wood panel of the elevator. Wasn't anything fancy. It was standard fake wood that they would put in any elevator. And there was the microwave, you know, cheese grater inductive shielding for that lighting system. We teleported, the light overhead went off after the blast of air came on and the side lighting rail came on. That was your only light that you had for teleporting. That stayed on the entire time. The overhead lights.
Just white light?
It was just fluorescent.
Not kind of fluorescent. Cool. It didn't glow cool blue or anything like
that? No. Standard fluorescent lighting.
Uh-huh.
It was nothing impressive. It was just very notable that there was one, it wasn't symmetrical. There wasn't another one on the other side of the elevator. You faced the door, it was on your left. And it was about an inch wide, and it had the cheese grater kind of shielding that you see on a microwave oven for inductively shield it, so the electrons didn't get drawn out like the tethered satellite incident where the ground vehicles were having a party. And I teleported to Mars. The planet, there was a lot of clay, very notably. I even tasted the soil. And yes, I did taste it, just like any geologist would do. And it was clay. I hear you laughing, sir.
We
need some reverb on that. Oh, that was great. Yeah, it's...
So at the dust, and so Mars dust tastes like clay.
Yeah, it was clay. It was very notably clay. I noticed no smell the first day, first time I was there out or on the inside of the facility or outside, if it was even the same day. But I believe that halfway through that experience on that day, I did very much notice the smell of Mars dust, the smell to. And it has a chemical smell. It just, I don't think I was completely in training when I was there. You know, it could have, you know, smelled like one of the Rockefeller's oil refineries, and I wouldn't have noticed at that time. I was with people, and as soon as I was calmed down a little bit, I started noticing the smell, but that was about the last thing I noticed was that the sky was light blue, lighter than you would see here.
Mm-hmm.
There was very much clay. There was at this particular structure, there wasn't any. I don't think there was any plant life really around or anything. If I'd seen anything. We were kind of in the middle of the plateau. The location for the Mars jump rooms, actually, I discovered on Google Mars when they finally put it up, and this was after I had told the public and Andrew Bishago, or at least Andrew Bishago about these things, was that Well, I actually did say before I ever even looked up or was able to look up on George Norrie was that the jump rooms were very much close to an undeniable landmark or structure. Yeah, I wouldn't say at the time.
There's a controversy about a certain ex-member of Mars NASA's publicity. He's not telling the whole truth. And
yeah.
Should we just say that the whole truth is that there are a lot more monuments on Mars than just the one?
Yeah, there's about 2 million people that live on Mars.
Yeah, and that things like large structures like the pyramid and the Sphinx exist on Mars, and their locations are portals, is that correct? Or locations of bases?
Bases, yeah.
Yeah,
underground.
Like, it's got a human face on it. That's a face.
Sure.
Base. Sorry, go on.
Oh, go ahead.
Well, if the structure has got a humanoid face, then
yeah.
You can meet humans there. But if it had an alien face, that's where you'd get. You know, you'd get mantoids. You know.
Yeah. Basically, there's all sorts of equipment there. I'm sure there's portals or teleporters or whatever everywhere. Those markers were underground facilities or whatever, and was generally depicted what was there or was generally meant that it was safe. I don't know what the political system is there now that the military has, over the last 10 years has been really... imagine during the 90s, America went back to shooting down round vehicles that were, if they were too large or too close to Earth. And around that time is when they were really sectioning off areas that on Mars that it was controversial, for rovers and stuff. And those are kind of don't go into areas and which accounts for their completely corrupting and altering images.
So, Brett, this has been a fascinating 2 hours. It's zipped by. I'd really like to have you back. Would you come back one day?
I'd love to. This is very, very, very much fun. I enjoyed it. I enjoyed our off-air conversation. It was a lot more enthralling.
Well, there was a lot more cussing on them, I think.
Yeah, it was. I've so tempered myself.
Oh, people, very well
done. You have no idea how well I've tempered myself.
I would vouch for that. I would absolutely vouch for that. Thank you so much, Brett. It's been... enlightening. It's been entertaining, and I wanted to kind of let you talk. There have been questions in the chat room, and I was saying, you know, basically we'll do this telepathically, that you'll naturally speak the answers to the questions. I hope everybody's gotten kind of at least, you're going to have to listen to this show again and again and again in order to quite understand this. But what we're talking about here is the most important technological breakthroughs that humanity's ever had that we don't know about. And William has been very kind, really, to kind of open it up to the human race, really, for the rest of us, because...
I can feel the laser pointers on my forehead right now. A lot of them.
You'll be fine. You'll be fine. Yes. You're protected. You're protected by the wolf pack. We're coming up to the time. I would very much love to have you back. So we'll try and get that done quite soon. And really, maybe create a kind of new physics lesson. You know,
can I do a plug?
Go ahead, plug away.
There's a person who is fun to talk to when he ever does talk on the phone, but his Skype, and this is for Jason Verbelli, his Skype name is Sinewave Zero. all the hidden energies come from the transition of zero wave to motion, to where it goes forward, that magical point where on that over unity device. But his Skype is Sine Wave Zero. If you're blonde between the ages of 23 and 28 and are about 5'3" to 5'8" and have really long blonde hair, you're encouraged to call him on Skype. He would love to talk to you. that was just a friendly promo plug for Jason.
Well done, Jason. Sinewave Zero. I'm sure that there are lots and lots of 20-year-old intellectual blondes who listen to this show. Mind you, if there are any, then I'm sure... No, William, you're taken, aren't you? You have a happy thing going. So... That's brilliant. That's so there you go, Sophie.
So I think he might actually like that.
Yeah.
He'll love that.
Let him know about the archive. It'll be on it. So, brothers and sisters of the Ever Beyond Continuum, thank you very much for listening in tonight. I hope you got out as much as I got out of this. Brett, it's been great fun. God bless you. You'll be back. We want you back. Thank you very much.
Thank you for having me on. Thanks.